H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. ABC News confirming that Hollywood icon Robert Redford has died. ABC's Michelle Franzen has a look back on his life.
Robert Redford's breakthrough role came in 1969 when he co-starred with Paul Newman in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
I'll jump first.
Nope.
And you jump first.
No, I said.
What's the matter with you?
I can't swim!
Why, are you crazy? The fall will probably kill you.
Redford and Newman teamed up again in 1973's The Sting, and that same year it was Redford and Barbara Streisand in The Way We Were. Redford went on to win a Best Director Oscar in 1983 for Ordinary People. Asked once about the Oscar race.
If you're talking about a race, the Oscar race, that I have no use for.
Michelle Franzen, ABC News.
Robert Redford was 89 years old. This is ABC News.
For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly. With deer hunting seasons opening across the state, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding hunters to test their deer for chronic wasting disease. Hunters have a variety of options to test for the disease, including self-service kiosks using meat processors that can assist with sampling, arranging an appointment with the DNR, or by doing it themselves at home or in the field. Hunters should also be aware of counties with baiting and feeding bans that have been triggered by positive chronic wasting disease tests. Democratic state lawmakers are circulating a proposed bill that would allow Wisconsin residents struggling with suicidal thoughts to add themselves to a Do Not Sell list for firearms. The legislation is meant to allow those individuals to voluntarily give up access to firearms if they feel it is unsafe for them to have one. Research shows suicide attempts that do not involve a firearm are rarely fatal, but are nearly always fatal when they do. People who add themselves to the list could later apply to be removed from the database after a waiting period. Months after its closure, Northland College in Ashland has sold its baseball and softball fields. According to a WPR report, the college has sold a total of nearly $1.5 million worth of its real estate assets, including the sale of the president's house in July. The baseball and softball fields, along with their indoor practice and storage facility, were sold to Shawamagon Bay Friends of the Fields, a nonprofit organization which intends to use the fields for youth sports leagues. College officials say they're still hoping to find a single buyer for the whole campus. Northwood Technical College and Impact 7 held a groundbreaking ceremony and ribbon cutting for two housing projects last week. The projects were made possible through the Housing Opportunity and Mobile Education Solutions Initiative program as part of an effort to combine affordable housing with access to mobile workforce training labs operated by Northwood Technical College. The groundbreaking was held for the Trailview Cottages development in Hayward, and the ribbon cutting ceremony was held for Maplewood Cottages in St. Croix Falls. For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly.
The Badgers back in Madison. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers home this Saturday against the Maryland Terrapins. Wisconsin now 2-1 after their loss in Alabama over the weekend. Baseball, yesterday we told you Brewers manager Pat Murphy read a letter he said was from Bob Uecker to the team after they clinched the spot in the playoffs. Turns out it was another practical joke. Murphy now clarifies he wrote the letter all along, not Bob.
And it's just a way to honor the man, you know, and kind of put together some words that the players could resonate with, you know, things that he was about, because he's a big part of this thing. And I thought it would be a nice gesture to keep him involved. We brought the picture of him celebrating with us. And, you know, it was really about honoring him. And nobody believed in their right mind that, you know, he could produce a letter like that at this time, but his spirit is with us.
That's Pat Murphy with Sports on Mike Clemens.
You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
It is going to be mostly sunny today. Our high right around 83 this afternoon. The wind will be out of the south at only about 5 to 10. Tonight, partly cloudy, 61. Tomorrow, a few scattered thunderstorms, otherwise partly cloudy with a high of 82. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, a Fox host has to apologize after saying the homeless should be involuntarily executed. We'll talk about that with Todd Alba. Don't miss it.
Matinere on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Alba Show.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Good morning. Welcome back. Nice to have you here up north on a Tuesday morning, September 16th, 8:06 the time. Cam Stevenson is standing by from Courier Newsroom, live from the nation's capital to talk about recent events, which could have something to do with avoiding a government shutdown, could have something to do with the trade war, could have something to do with fighting inflation, but instead the theme is vengeance. And we will get into that in just a little bit. Then Dan Schaefer in our next half hour from the Recombobulation area and Civic Media political editor, talking about the growing candidate field for governor for 2026. But first, let's get a quick update on the forecast from meteorologist Brittany Merlot, who joins us to talk about how there is some rain, there is some thunder in the north central part of the state, but that is not going to be the case around the rest of the state. It's just summer. Summer,
yeah,
again.
It really is.
We're digging.
Gorgeous.
That. Yeah.
The only things we have to deal with, like you said, is those few scattered showers and storms up towards Phillips, Park Falls, Tomahawk, Minocqua area. Otherwise, foggy conditions by the Great Lakes, Superior, Sheboygan, even Manitowoc. You're seeing some dense fog off the lake. Otherwise, super sunny as we go through the afternoon. Highs in the mid-80s. We're going to put that on repeat again tomorrow. We could have some isolated spotty showers and storms spark in the early evening tomorrow. And then we could see some more storms up north on Thursday. But otherwise, the rest of the state still holding muggy and warm and still into those mid-80s for the entire week, basically, until we start to cool down into the weekend and more rain starts to roll our way with a big system.
Oh, no. It just occurred to me. First day of fall is coming up before too much longer, isn't it?
Monday, the 22nd.
Oh, what are we doing here?
In second summer right now. We can't have fall.
Right? Let's see. On the text line from Tom in Hartford, is Eagle River going to get some rain?
Oh, yeah. Just a little bit of sprinkles. Looks like it's headed your way. Doesn't look like the storms will, though.
All right. There you go. How's that for spot forecasting right there, huh? All right, Brittany. Thank you very much. Talk to you later.
You're welcome.
All right. Remember, you can sign up for our newsletters, upnorthnewswi.com. And Up North News is part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom that is filled with state outlets and newsletters and podcasts. And one of those newsletters is Below the Beltway. Cam Stevenson puts it together from Capitol Hill. Head to couriernewsroom.com or beltway.news to learn more. Cam Stevenson joins us now from Washington, D.C. Cam, how are you?
Hey, Pat, I'm doing all right. I was actually wondering if Brittany had a text line I could call in case, so I can check and see if it rains before I wash my car.
She probably could do that for you. I'll get you guys set up. We do the personalized forecast here on demand. Full service is what we're up to here. So this week we have spent a lot of time, well, Friday and then Monday, and then again today, talking about Congressman Derek Van Orden from Western Wisconsin, who arguably, because I can't track all the members of Congress, but I would contend arguably has done more than any other member in terms of threatening behavior, insulting behavior, obscene behavior. But I know he's not alone. And I know that that starts not only at the top with Donald Trump's rhetoric, but you had the vice president of the United States, J.D. Vance, doing Charlie Kirk's former radio show live from his government office. He had Stephen Miller on. And so between all of those guys and the folks you cover on Capitol Hill, it sure seems like the theme this week has been vengeance.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're 100% right. They are, I guess, invoking Reagan's trickle down theory of vengeance, where it starts at the top. The president of the United States has said some very incorrect things about what happened to Charlie Kirk, about how he died, who killed him. And that's just kind of been trickling down ever since. J.D. Vance, he had a broadcast from the White House talking about leftist violence, which isn't really a thing, especially compared to far-right violence. And now we're seeing, well, now as in the past 3 days and since late last week, people like Representative Van Orden who are turning this into a battle cry. When you said he was tweeting a lot, I thought, oh, okay, this guy's, he's posting some stuff online. He's saying some, whatever. He's doing his thing. But I was scrolling through his feed, and I don't know if he has slept in the past 72 hours. He is on constant watch trying to get people fired for using their First Amendment rights. And it seems like, I don't know if he's even in D.C. because it seems like that's his full-time job right now.
We stopped counting at 550, and there have clearly been many more tweets since that time, but it's not fair to any intern or anything to make them count it up. So we've seen it from the president, the vice president, this member of Congress. I know other members of Congress as well. Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee was, putting up other people's posts calling for them to be fired. And so I don't doubt that that's still the theme on Capitol Hill, but it begs the question, they have an actual job that doesn't involve violating people's First Amendment rights. Are we not getting closer to a government shutdown and the need for Republicans to probably need Democratic votes to pass a budget?
Yeah, I feel like we have entered some bureaucratic version of Groundhog Day where nearly every day you wake up and there's another government shutdown coming down the pike. But yeah, the last reconciliation bill was not long term. It was through September. It's mid-September now. And I have heard very little about budget negotiations, but that is an important part of getting a budget passed, is actually meeting members of Congress, legislating, discussing, negotiating, and compromising, which I think is going to be the hardest part, because so far under Trump's second term, Republicans in Congress seem not only allergic, but disgusted by the idea of compromise.
Yes. And there was a report yesterday that the president was telling congressional Republicans to cut Democrats out of any negotiations. And look, from a coaching standpoint, I guess you could see the logic in that, is to say, look, gang, you've got the majority. If you all hang together, you can pass anything you want. But they have proven year after year after year after year, they cannot all hang together. They end up needing Democratic votes to pass something. So cutting Democrats out doesn't sound like a great idea, especially when you have these Affordable Care Act premium subsidies that were put in place during the Biden administration getting set to expire. And you had Speaker of the House Mike Johnson yesterday saying, yeah, keeping those subsidies from expiring, that's not really a priority for us right now. That's a heck of a thing for the Speaker of the House to say, is it? It really doesn't matter to us if everybody's health insurance costs go up.
Yeah, well, and especially after they did something even apparently even worse than compromising, which is they were able to agree on a budget a few months ago that is cutting healthcare for millions of people. And now that they're talking about getting rid of ACA subsidies, and I mean, just the idea of saying, we're going to cut millions of people off of healthcare, and now we're going to cut more funding for healthcare, all the while billionaires are paying less in taxes than ever before, is absurd. And it's, to throw this back at Speaker Johnson, it's it's an immoral way to legislate, where you value someone's bottom line versus over someone's health and their survival.
Well, yeah. And it deals with what's happening here in the real world. We're talking to Cam Stevenson, Courier Newsroom, political correspondent up on Capitol Hill here, about what Congress should be working on versus what they've been doing in the wake of the Charlie Kirk murder. We've certainly talked about the shutdown. We've talked about Affordable Care Act subsidy assistance expiring. Agricultural stuff is no longer as sexy on Capitol Hill as it used to be back in olden times, when you can always count on the House and Senate agriculture committees to make a big deal about what happens in rural America. But with Trump's trade war right now, and you have China, which normally purchases about $12 billion worth of soybeans, has not placed a single order yet. I'm sure there's going to be talk about, you know, bailout payments to farmers to try to keep them whole, even though their crops are going to be rotting somewhere, either in the field or in these storage bins all around the country. Have you heard any chatter like that yet, or are they still too focused on the Charlie Kirk murder to think about our farmers?
I haven't heard anything about any bailouts for local farmers. What I personally think would be more likely and more in line with this administration would be an opportunity for large corporate farms to buy these struggling local farms for pennies on the dollar, to create huge conglomerates, to cut down costs for corporations and the wealthy, and not only waste all of that food, you know, that the billions of dollars of soybeans that China's not buying, it's not being sold. So not only is no one buying it, but this is all just going to waste. This is all getting thrown away in the trash while people starve. And so I haven't heard anything about what they want to do to remedy that. And I don't think that is an accident. I think that they have no intention to remedy it.
Which, again, ought to be something that every family farmer across Wisconsin pays attention to and look for any glimmer of hope that they give a damn about what's going to happen to this year's harvest and how it's going to pile up. Now, a lot of this is obviously the environment that it is in the wake of the Charlie Kirk murder. And it was, again, a horrific incident that had no justification whatsoever. But there are still these other matters out there, including the case of to what degree Donald Trump was involved with sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein. And in your newsletter, you've talked about ways that the late sexual predator Epstein, you know, how he came to be, you know, funded for all of his many travels and activities. And so this is all to say that you and the folks at Courier Newsroom and elsewhere, you've not taken your eye off the ball, that this Epstein case is still very relevant.
Yeah, not only is it relevant, it honestly ties into what's happening right now perfectly. You know, we keep talking about how there's these, you know, these billionaires who are able to get huge tax breaks, who are able to brazenly, you know, start consolidating even local farms and local produce. This is just a blatant money grab that we haven't seen in probably a century. And that's because the wealthy and powerful have been allowed to get emboldened and allowed to get away with so much. And a big part of that is what was going on with Jeffrey Epstein. You know, the finances between him and billionaires, you know, like Leon Black, like potentially Donald Trump, like Les Wexler, who founded Victoria's Secret, among other things. These wealthy people, you know, those are the people that we know about. There's dozens, hundreds of other people who paid for services from Jeffrey Epstein, who are now purchasing farms, who are now working in our government, who are able to do these bold things because we've allowed them to get away with so much for so long. And so continuing on that thread and pushing the U.S. Treasury to release the financial information of Jeffrey Epstein, so that congressional investigators can actually find out who he was financially tied to and hold them accountable that way, I think is just as important and integral to solving the wealth disparity that we're seeing right now.
Again, you can read more from Cam Stevenson at Below the Beltway. Head over to beltway.news and couriernewsroom.com for more. Cam, appreciate you joining us from DC. Have a great start to your day.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thank you. When we come back, we're going to be talking in a bit here to Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area with another big name candidate in the Wisconsin governor's race. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on The Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Does Trump's big bill end taxes on tips and overtime? No. President Donald Trump's new law exempts certain tip and overtime income from federal tax. But the deductions expire in 2028 and come with limits. Workers earning under $150,000 can deduct up to $25,000 in tips and $12,500 in overtime. Social Security, Medicare, and state taxes still apply. The Tax Policy Center says 2% of households will benefit from the tip provision, saving $1,800. The White House estimates $1,400 in average annual savings from the overtime deduction. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Make every day extraordinary with something special from Wisconsin. From artisan cheeses to fresh produce to maple syrup, the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection's Something Special from Wisconsin program is proud to work with member businesses that certify their Wisconsin-made and processed products. Look for the red and yellow sticker and visit somethingspecialfromwisconsin.com to find member businesses and products made with care, quality, and love. Sponsored by Wisconsin DATCP.
Snakes, zombies, public speaking, the list of fears is endless. But the real danger is in your hand when you're behind the wheel. Distracted driving is what's really scary, and even deadly. Eyes forward, don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WBZH. I'm Mark Lundeen, and here's what's happening in Hayward today. I'm talking today with Heather Ledzik of the Cable Area Chamber of Commerce. Good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you today?
I'm doing good. We're looking forward to fall.
Good.
And we're going to be talking about your fall festival coming up September 26th and the 27th. Right downtown Cable area. Tell me all about it. How do things start off on the 26th, Friday night at 4 o'clock? What's going on?
Yes, this is our 23rd Fall Fest. And on Friday night, we have a street dance. And so we have a big tent set up behind the chamber.
Okay.
We have live music. Nick Kuka will be, he's a local favorite. And he will be performing starting at 5 till 7. And then we have the Whitecaps playing until 10:30 that night. And the Whitecaps are just awesome. They play just about anything and super, super fun. We had them last year and people just loved them.
Yeah.
So we'll have food trucks. So we've got about 10 food trucks signed up right now. So there'll be a variety of carnival food that you can eat. We'll have a beer and wine tent. We'll have some street games and things to do. We'll have a pie eating contest.
Ooh.
And a bake sale.
What kind of pies?
The pie eating contest. You know, I haven't decided yet what the pies will be for the pie eating contest.
Is it the contestant
Last year we had
choice?
A variety.
Contestant choice on the pie?
Well, we did that last year, but I'm not sure that was fair because, you know, so I think we may have to just go with a standard pie. That is one of our new Friday night traditions. We're really excited. We'll have Angry Minnow beer, which everybody loves.
Yep.
We'll have a 50-50 raffle. And then, like I said, we'll have some events out on the street for fun. We'll have some fire pits and we'll probably have beer pong and cornhole, but okay. That is just our Friday night kickoff for Fall Fest. Yep. So we're hoping people can come and join us. We hope for good weather, of course, but, you know, we're going rain or shine. That's for sure.
Everything continues then on Saturday, September 27th. What time does that open? Well, it looks like you start off with a pancake breakfast.
Yes, we do a pumpkin pecan pancake breakfast. That starts at 7:30, and that's at our Cable Community Center, which is just a couple blocks off of the main drag in,
okay.
in Cable.
Yeah.
The other festivities on Main Street and right in the center of town start at 9 a.m. We have our street craft vendors, artists, all sorts of things. Last year we had 85 vendors on the streets of Cable,
wow.
which was just
yeah.
the biggest ever. And, you know, we've outgrown almost our space. We've got to get creative this year
sure.
on how we're going to arrange that. But we had, I think, 15 food vendors, and we had everything from candles to woodworkers to clothing to bake sales. And we even had one of our churches do a mother's booth where, or you could call it a parent's booth, where if you have a baby that needs to be changed and needs a little nap or to rest,
yes.
or mothers that need to feed their
mm-hmm.
children, they can go into this little quiet area and relax and have a place to sit.
What
well,
a good idea.
Yeah, that's been a really nice thing. So we also have a car show, a classic car show.
I saw
and
that.
I mean, it's
yeah.
cars, trucks, motorcycles. Yes, and we usually have about 70 to 80
wow.
participants.
Okay.
We have 10 categories. That is just really fun. We have a kids' choice where the kids get to vote on their favorite. That goes from 10 to 2. We also will have bounce houses. Bounce houses and kids' activities out on the lawn. We've got a giant New Holland inflatable tractor for them to slide on. We also have
yeah.
someone this year that's going to come and give hay rides, which will be really, really fun.
Sure.
So,
that'll be fun.
And, of course, can't really forget the music that we'll have on Saturday. On Saturday, we start off the day with the world famous Sean and Ian,
yes.
everybody's favorite.
Yep.
Yes, Sean and Ian will be playing from 10 to 1 right at the Chamber. And from 1 to 4, we have a band called The Whiskey Chase. And they are going to come for the afternoon of Saturday for Fall Fest.
Okay.
We're really, really excited to have them.
I see in here you have a youth entrepreneur market. Now, that's very interesting. What is that about?
Yeah, this was an idea that was brought to us by the Bayfield County Economic Development Corporation, and their former director, Cole Rabska, had seen this youth entrepreneur market when he was out west on a hunting trip. And basically what it is it gives kids that are not like established business owners, or they're just really interested, or they make a craft, or they make something that they think, you know, I think I would like to have my own business someday and
right.
sell a product. So they get a chance to have a free booth, and they get to sell and learn what it's like to be an entrepreneur
and
make their products and sell them. This is just for little kids. I mean, kids under the age of 16 who are just getting started in this field. So,
yeah.
It gives them an opportunity to get their feet wet in the field, and see what it's all about to have their own business.
Very cool. Well, Heather, thank you for chatting with us. We're talking about the Cable Area Fall Festival coming up September 26th and the 27th. If you want more information about it, where can people go to find more information, Heather?
Well, you can go to our website, which is cable4fun.com. That's cable4fun.com. And right on the top right corner, you'll see a 23rd annual Cable Fall Fest countdown calendar. You can click on that. And we have all of our sponsors and the schedule of events and all the times and locations.
All right. Very cool.
Well, Heather, thanks for chatting with me today. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to WBZH Hayward Today, local report on mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in the Hayward Lakes area, download the Civic Media app and click on WBZH in the radio station listings. Coming up after local news and information, Pat Kreitlow returns. I'm Mark Lundeen, and I'll be back with more Hayward area information tomorrow morning. It's 8:29.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to 96.9 WBZH, Hayward's home to the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly. A pair of Republican state lawmakers are proposing legislation to promote community solar energy programs across the state. The legislation has been proposed in previous sessions, but never gained enough support to move forward. If passed into law, it would allow local municipalities to approve small-scale solar energy projects rather than requiring approval by the Public Service Commission. The lawmakers expect to gain bipartisan support for the measure this session, and Governor Tony Evers has expressed support for expanding solar energy use. State Senator Kelda Royce has officially announced she will join the growing Democratic primary field for governor in the 2026 election. Royce is the fourth Democrat to enter the race after Governor Tony Evers announced he would not seek a third term, joining Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, and American Family Field vendor Ryan Sternad. Washington County Executive Josh Shulman and New Berlin businessman Bill Berrien are the only two Republicans to officially enter the race so far. Barron County officials gathered for a groundbreaking ceremony on a new Welcome Center on Monday morning. Representatives from the Pioneer Village Museum say the project on Highway W has been years in the making, and they've raised about $1.4 million of their $2 million goal. When completed, the facility will house the Barron County Tourism Information Center, the Blue Hills Genealogical Society's resources, and the Pioneer Village Museum's administrative offices. Organization officials say they're still accepting donations for the project. The city of Spooner will apply for grant funding through the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources to treat trees infected by the emerald ash borer. The invasive beetle has spread rapidly across the northwest region over recent years, with experts predicting they could eventually kill 99% of the ash trees in the state. The grant funding will be used to treat 100 trees, replace 30 other trees, and remove 30 more. City officials also plan to share information on treating the invasive beetles with property owners so they can do it themselves. For WBZH and WHSM News, I'm James Kelly.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. If this past weekend box office earnings are any indication, anime has completely arrived. Demon Slayer Infinity Castle found itself at the top of the box office with a $70 million opening weekend. Its opening day take of $33 million was the highest opening ever for an anime film. Last week's number one film, The Conjuring Last Rites, held off three challengers for the number two spot and a take of $26 million. The three new releases include Downton Abbey, which brought in $18 million big ones in its first week of release to finish at number three. The Stephen King-inspired The Long Walk pulled in $11.5 million over the weekend. The film is based on King's first novel of the same title. And in fifth place was sort of a new release, or more accurately, a new re-release, as Toy Story brought in over $3 million on over 200 screens, giving it a massive haul of $195 million dating back about 30 years. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Buzz of the North, 96.9, WBZH, Hayward's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
It is going to be mostly sunny today. Our high right around 83 this afternoon. The wind will be out of the south at only about 5 to 10. Tonight, partly cloudy, 61. Tomorrow, a few scattered thunderstorms, otherwise partly cloudy with a high of 82. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp, 62.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Susan Kearns from Milwaukee Film joins me to talk about a really sweet event. Then renowned Milwaukee-based singer-songwriter Trapper Shep joins me and shares his amazing music. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Milwaukee Brewers are back in action after an off day, starting a three-game series with the Los Angeles Angels tonight, tomorrow night, Thursday night. Coverage begins at 6:05 each evening on Civic Media stations around the network. Head over to the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us, to learn more. And while you're online, head over to the Up North News website, upnorthnewswi.com, and sign up for our newsletters, including our Sunday morning newsletter, which features our question of the week. And for that, we'll bring in Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor and founder of the Recombobulation Area. Dan Schaefer, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Mr. Kreitlow. Always wonderful to join you here on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Fun having you here. Let's get into this. I broke my listeners. I broke some of our newsletter readers in asking the question of the week and the way that I worded it. Now, I know you caught, Dan, last week that Ron Johnson was again encouraging the conspiracy theory that maybe it was more than two planes that brought down the World Trade Center. That may, you know, there's that theory that Building 7 had all these explosives in the basement or something along those lines. And so here he's doing this on the anniversary of 9/11. And I asked in our newsletter, if you could get Ron Johnson to stop talking forever about just one of these conspiracies, what would it be? Option A, the COVID vaccine is dangerous and ivermectin isn't getting used enough because of a conspiracy. B, claims about Russian involvement in the 2016 election on Trump's behalf are part of a conspiracy. C, the 2020 election results are faulty because of some conspiracy, when Johnson actually had a potential role in Trump's attempted coup. Option D, the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center involved more than two airplanes, and a conspiracy is preventing us from learning more. I ask people to pick one. I cannot tell you how many people have written back in going, I can't pick one. You have to give us an all of the above option. Yeah, folks were not happy about it. Not mad at me, but just like, how do you pick one of these coming from the senior senator from the state of Wisconsin?
He sure has become one of the chief conspiracy peddlers in the United States government, that's for sure. And most of these are so obviously absurd and ridiculous that it almost isn't even worth talking about. I'm going to give my own answer and answer E.
Okay.
Are you ready, Pat?
Yes.
I'm going to say that the conspiracy to get rid of for Ron Johnson is that trickle-down economics works.
Oh, very nice. Okay, that was very well played. And he loves that one and, of course, was able to pass that that big old bloated budget bill to prove it. And now we get to careen toward another government shutdown. For all the talk about the Charlie Kirk murder, and of course we will get to that, and Derek Van Orden's reaction and everything else, while we're on the subject of things they could be doing otherwise, I mean, a government shutdown is looming out there. And I would expect, once again, Ron Johnson is probably going to be cheerleader number one for that. He's never seen a government shutdown he didn't like.
Yeah, he always seems to want to be, I guess, more open to this than anything else because he doesn't really actually want to fund a lot of government programs. And so he's always wanting to cut spending. And or we got to worry about the debt right until a bill that would massively slash taxes is going to explode the debt. And then he's going to vote for it every single time. So, you know, I'm interested to see how Democrats play whatever leverage that they might have with this shutdown battle that is looming ahead of us. But we can I think at this point, Ron Johnson, the 15 years that we've seen of him in office, we can kind of expect how he's going to operate in these types of scenarios, can't we?
Yes, we do. We definitely have a look at that. All right, let's take a break from Congress. We've talked so much about Van Orden. We will get back to it, but we had, you know, some more recent news with yesterday's entry into the governor's race of State Senator Kel DeRoys. She's a frequent guest here on Civic Media on all the various shows, and got into the race to, you know, surprising nobody. She's run for office before, but, you know, for whatever reasons, picked this week to launch her campaign. Tell us a bit about what we think we can expect from Senator Kel DeRoys and how the Democratic primary contest is starting to shape up. What do you think of it?
Yeah, these announcements are ramping up after Labor Day. We were talking about in the summer that some of these candidates who said, yes, I'm planning to run, I'm planning to announce. And we talked about how that's probably not going to happen right in the middle of August when people are maybe not paying as much attention to the political news cycle. Once they get back to school, back to, you know, the regular fall news cycle, that we expect some of these to ramp up. So we had David Crowley last week we were talking about on this show. And then this week, Kel DeRoys. I imagine we're going to get more announcements in the coming days and weeks as well. But Kel DeRoys, I think, you know, obviously she ran in 2018 for governor, you know, didn't make it out of the Democratic primary, but had a pretty strong showing. And then I think, you know, one of the things that I really have been impressed by with Kel DeRoys is the job that she has done in the state Senate and on the Joint Finance Committee. You know, she in the period in between gubernatorial runs, I guess you could say, she has really gotten a whole lot better as a politician. I think she's really gotten better as a legislator, and speaks to a lot of these issues. She's had a lot of really standout moments in the Joint Finance Committee and things like that. And I think she's in her second term as a state senator representing the 26th district in Madison. And I think that is going to help her in this campaign, in her prospects for winning a primary, because I think the work that she has done since 2020. Since she has been on in the state Senate on Joint Finance Committee, there's a lot to point to that she's been able to accomplish. And I think she can also speak to, you know, just the challenges that reside in the halls of the Wisconsin State Legislature in the Republican controlled, you know, Senate and Assembly that has dominated state politics for the better part of the last 15 years. So, I'm interested to see what type of endorsements she might pick up over the course of this. You know, she having a lot of work on reproductive rights in her background, I do imagine that some of those groups will be getting behind her in this. But I'm interested to see which other state legislators, which other community leaders, other groups might be endorsing her in this run, and where some of those groups are lining up, and what is going to shape up to be a pretty crowded primary, I think.
Yes, it is. And yes, you're absolutely right that some of these groups will get a lot of scrutiny. I'm sure they're feeling a lot of pressure from one candidate or another to say, look, you know, I'm your favorite. You know, I've done more for you than anybody else. And some groups will endorse. And I'm sure there'll be some other groups that say, you know, there's multiple good candidates. We will just wait and help you in the general, which is really what no candidate wants to hear when you're in a crowded primary field. You want to get whatever extra dollars or door knockers that you can possibly handle. However, you've got what we said was going to be happening here. You've got a primary now for governor in both parties. You're going to have a primary in some of these other seats. We had Jocasta Zamarripa on yesterday running for Secretary of State. There is already another Democrat, I believe a young man from the Stevens Point area, who is in the race. We talked to Emily Berge earlier today, one of three Democratic candidates in the 3rd Congressional District. We're going to have candidates running in multiple candidates running in primaries in various legislative races. We're going to probably have story about another one tomorrow in the 17th Senate district here. So, Dan, never mind the candidates. We always say, candidates, just get used to it. There's going to be a primary. Now we got to talk to voters and get them used to the idea that, you know, you really got to pay attention and you really got to go vote come August.
Yeah, I think there's two things that I see as primaries being a benefit to Democrats in this election cycle. One is, I think Democrats have avoided primaries to their detriment, I think, to a certain extent in the past. And I think there is this iron sharpens iron quality that can come from having a competitive primary. If you're tested in the primary, that's going to have you more ready for the general election. And I think we've seen a number of examples of that over the years. And I think that is one piece of it. But another piece, too, I think speaks to the changing media environment that we all live in. And I think part of what is so... What the Trump and MAGA Republicans have understood in ways that Democrats have not is that we are living in an attention economy now, and we need to get people's attention. And that is a real competition. And I think, you know, Republicans are very good at getting people's attention. They're not very good at governing, but they're very good at getting people's attention. And I think primaries in this sense can get people's attention. If there is competition here, if people are like choosing their candidate or rooting for their person or wanting to see a debate or whatever it might be, I think there is a benefit to that that would get people looking at what Democrats are doing and saying in ways that they might not be able to break through otherwise. And I think these primaries that we are could be having this year, next year in Wisconsin, you know, I don't love that our primary is in August. I wish it was part of the April spring election. That's perhaps a conversation for another time. But I think that there is a lot to be gained from a primary. And I think in Wisconsin, you're right, we're going to be looking at a lot of state Senate primaries, congressional primaries, and then all of the statewide office holders going through and all of that. We're going to have governor, lieutenant governor, secretary of state, and maybe state treasurer even has a primary. Who knows? But I think these can be a very good thing for Democrats.
And we still don't know what Josh Call's going to do.
So we don't know what Josh Call's going to do. That's right.
Primary for attorney general. Alicia notes on YouTube, there's a primary in the 8th Congressional District on the Democratic side for the first time in a while as well. And so, again, this is just the nature of a primary, though. And one of the potential drawbacks is that there will be people who, you know, they all want a fighter, and they're, you know, at the risk of almost running a purity test. And to that end, there was an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel all about Scott Walker's reaction to the Charlie Kirk assassination, and talking about, you know, the security for, you know, conservative activists, and quoted in there, I heard from somebody else, they were really unhappy that Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley, who's running for governor, had a quote on WISN where he said, "We need to stop the violent political rhetoric on both sides of the aisle." When he asked if some Republicans about Republicans suggesting some Democrats are to blame, Crowley said, "It's unfortunate that we're literally pointing the finger at partisanship. We shouldn't be focusing on what political beliefs people have on who to blame when it comes down to this." And again, that may be the right things in the moment, but there were definitely people unhappy that he both sided a quote about, you know, violent political rhetoric on both sides, when, you know, the record does not indicate that that is so.
You're right. The record does not indicate, but I tend to agree with the Milwaukee County Executive on this point. And I think we need to celebrate the leaders who are looking to calm things down and have a rational conversation about things. And I do think, yes, we can say that there has been more violent rhetoric coming from the right, but I think we would be wrong to say that it is only coming from the right. I think we do need to recognize that there are certain problems on the left as well. And I think we need to recognize that and not overlook it in this conversation too. I think there are pieces that we need to, you know, we ran this piece at the Recombobulation Area last week from Emily Cephos, talking about how so much of the reaction that we've seen since Charlie Kirk's death has been amounted to this trying to score points in this endless online game. I think we just need to stop running around in circles about this and just, you know, I think we all need to grieve collectively that political violence in America is on the rise, and it is a bad thing, and we need to condemn it, and it needs to stop.
Dan Schaefer, political editor for Civic Media and founder of the Recombobulation Area, is with us. We will get into Derek Van Orden's reaction, the ongoing stream of obscenities and threats as part of it. And, of course, we'll get into girls basketball coaching as well. Still some more final news and notes here from Lake Wasota coming up on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
We want to help you promote your community event for free. Tell us about your nonprofit group or organization's upcoming event, and we'll help you promote it on the Buzz of the North. Email us the information or a copy of the flyer to community@whsm.com. That's community@whsm.com. You can also drop off your flyer at our office on East 3rd Street in Hayward, or mail it to 16880 W, Highway 63, Hayward, 54843. Hometown Radio Refreshed on 96.9 WBZH.
Do you have three ex-wives and your current trophy wife wants a life insurance policy three times the size of the policies you had to purchase for your previous mistakes? If so, you need to call Big Lou at Term Provider, 800-859-3220. Big Lou is intimately familiar with your problems, and if you're 50 to 60 years old and in reasonably good health, a $1 million policy should only cost about $100 to $200 per month. Big Lou may have a solution for your previous policies as well. You may even save enough money to lighten the load on your new $1 million policy. Remember, call Big Lou. He's like you. Except he's only on number two. Call Term Provider at 800-859-3220. That's 800-859-3220. For $1 million in term life insurance that you can live with. Call Big Lou at 800-859-3220. 800-859-3220.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The American Bar Association has issued a final report and recommendations from its ABA Task Force for American Democracy. The report calls for major reform to elections, civics education, and the role of lawyers in defending constitutional governance. The project was chaired by former U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson, a Democrat, and former U.S. Federal Judge J. Michael Luttig, a Republican. Among several reforms, the report calls for substantial state and federal investments in K-12 civics education. It recommends establishing citizen-led independent redistricting commissions to reduce the partisan and racial gerrymandering unfolding right now in Texas and other states. It encourages states to adopt open primaries, ranked choice voting, or fusion voting to reduce polarization and increase accountability. The report also calls for expanding automatic and same-day registration, standardizing early and mail voting procedures, and an election day holiday. For election workers, the report calls for depoliticizing selection of election officials and setting professional standards and codes of responsibility. It also calls for stronger protections of those workers and the funding to support it. For lawyers, ABA recommends more law school training and continuing ed on election law, and affirming lawyers' responsibility to uphold the rule of law. We've linked the full report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Tomorrow on the program, we've got Bryn Horton from the Wisconsin Public Education Network talking about what kinds of education-related bills are hanging out at the state capitol, looking for action now that the state budget bill is done. Some would do some good, some not so much. But also tomorrow, we will have State Representative Francesca Hong, who's been teasing that she has some kind of an announcement to make tomorrow, and Corrine Hendrickson. Corrine has been on the show many times from New Glarus talking about the issue of child care. And she, too, says there's an announcement that she wants to make tomorrow. So a very busy day coming up on the program. Jim and Appleton on the text line says, yep, unilateral disarmament again. When, oh, when will the Democratic Party and all of its pundits play the game they are in and not the one they wish they were in? I've been waiting for 40 years now. Jim, we appreciate that. You can text us through the Civic Media app anytime and use the voice note feature as well. Let's bring Dan Schaefer back in, founder of the Recombobulation Area and political editor for Civic Media. And we were all set to talk about Cap Time's Idea Fest last week anyway. You talked to Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, who was one of the speakers last week. Now comes the breaking news that Governor Tim Walz has decided he will run for a third term as Minnesota governor, which will not be a slam dunk for him. There are some headwinds for him in Minnesota, but what was your conversation like, Dan, with the Minnesota governor?
Well, it was at Cap Time's Idea Fest. He sat down on stage on Friday night with John Nichols from the Cap Times to speak about his run as VP and a whole host of other things. And while discussing that, he did touch on his political future as well. There was a question about that, asking about running for re-election. And Tim Walz said that he's going to make a decision soon and notes that no one has ever won a third term as Minnesota governor. And he said, it sure doesn't seem like now is the time to leave the field. That's all that with all that's going on. So not surprised at all to see today that our neighbor to the west is our friend Tim Walz is running for a third term after some of those comments that he made there. And overall, I thought it was a really interesting discussion. He's obviously had a pretty unique perspective on political violence this summer, given what has happened to one of his closest political allies, Melissa Hortman, when she was assassinated along with her husband in their home. And he talked a lot about the different reactions nationally to that assassination and the one that we saw last week with Charlie Kirk. And I think there was he talked a little bit about how some of the different reactions, how there is not a shared humanity in mourning some of these losses the way that there should be. And I think the governor is right to point that out.
Without a doubt. And of course, the ongoing story of Congressman Derek Van Orden's reaction continues to loom out here simply because, again, of its sheer recklessness and the appearance, again, of a member of the government wanting to infringe on people's First Amendment rights. You look at the rest of the congressional delegation, probably more so than I do, of all the other Republicans. Is anybody even approaching Derek Van Orden in terms of the vile language, the invectives, the obscenity, the threats, anything like that?
I think Tom Tiffany, to a certain extent, has, you know, continued the type of rhetoric that we've seen from him. But I don't think it's come close to reaching heights, but I suppose I should say depths of what Derek Van Orden has been saying over the past few days. He is really in his own category. And I think it goes to show that he is more of an outlier than anybody else in this. Like, I think there are more people talking about wanting to, you know, calm down the rhetoric and take down the temperature and all of these different things. And I think Van Orden has been the outlier in going the other direction. But at the same time, there's also, you know, there's no, also it doesn't seem to be anybody on his side telling him, hey, maybe cool it with several hundred tweets a day about, you know, whatever witch hunts or you know, the types of things that he's been talking about on his Twitter feed. I'm still going to call it Twitter. I think it's problematic, but it's also just like, is he actually going to do anything about this, or is he just like saying stuff? And I think that's the real divide with Van Orden, because he's not a particularly active legislator.
No. And so, I mean, it would be a full-time job just to try to follow up on every single one of these threats to defund this person, this group, this city. And so consequently, you realize he's wasting time. He's wasting his time. He's wasting our resources, which, you know, again, is par for the course, but really gives you insight into the character of the man. Brewers clinched a playoff spot over the weekend. They are looking really hard to get past whatever first round of the playoffs they happen to be in. Are we feeling good about that, or are we careening toward the postseason, you know, with a sense of nervousness given our past?
I mean, if you don't have a sense of nervousness going into the playoffs, you're not a Milwaukee Brewers fan. But we're hoping to host a lot of home games here in Milwaukee for the playoffs coming up. So I hope they're able to get, you know, the home field advantage. Hope they're able to win that division. Let's get that bullpen healthy. I'm a little bit worried about some of the injuries that they've had in that bullpen. We need a good bullpen, good healthy bullpen going into the playoffs. And I think if anything about the Brewers right now, that's what's making me nervous.
Rightly so. And still a little too soon to talk Milwaukee Bucks, so why don't we get to your other favorite basketball team, which is whatever girls basketball team you're going to be coaching. How's it looking, Coach? You got the clipboard ready?
We're getting together for some. Yeah, I'm going to be coaching some girls basketball this year. I have as many of your listeners may know, a girl dad. I have two daughters, and my oldest of the two is getting interested in some basketball. Must be all hundreds of Bucks games that have been on in the background in our house over the past however many years all the time. So I've successfully brainwashed her into being a basketball fan, and now we'll be coaching this fall.
That'll be fun. I'll be looking forward. Kind of like talking to Joseph Becky and Jimmy Koska to hear about the games that are getting coached. So I hope it's a lot of fun and takes your mind off of the news business for a little while here. Dan Schaefer, again, follow him at The Recombobulation Area. Thank you very much for being part of things today, Dan. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Pat. Be well.
All right. And again, it's therecombobulationarea.news is what I meant to say there. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network. Thanks for being part of our Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your day. We'll see you Wednesday morning, bright and early, 6 a.m., right here, back up north.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Actor and Oscar-winning director Robert Redford has died at the age of 89. His publicist said he passed away at his home at Sundance in the mountains of Utah. FBI Director Kash Patel scheduled to testify today before the Senate Judiciary Committee. He is expected to talk about oversight of the FBI and could be asked questions about the Charlie Kirk killing. The man accused of murdering him is due in court today. ABC's Matt Gutman is there.
That suspect is being held under what's called special watch, essentially isolation to ensure that others don't harm him or that he doesn't harm himself. And ahead of the formal murder charges being brought against him later today, the FBI has been laying out a tremendous amount of evidence against him, including what they're calling